Welcome.
This is Be There Magazine celebrating 45 years of publishing. From Russell's News to Be There Magazine, we got a special guest coming on. She'll be coming on in about maybe 5 or 10 minutes. But stand by. But we're talking about our new 45 years of publishing. It's been a big one. It's been a big 45 years. And we've been doing this for 45 years. From Russell's News to Be There Magazine. Nonstop. And we're so happy that we can do this because it wasn't an easy struggle. It was a long, hard struggle. But we never gave up. I'm living proof. If you do something and don't stop, you can do it forever. Because what's it all about today? It's about loving people and doing work and making people's lives different. We build people's lives. We drive people to websites and put people in seats. The magazine tells you where to go, who to call, and how to get there. It tells you things like what's happening in the city. We also spotlight people. Different events, and we've been going to the Black Caucus for over 45 years. 45 years we've been going to the caucus. Well, since 1973. On our newsmaker line, we have a wonderful, awesome, awesome guest. Her name is Maggie Denise Lewis. She's a caterer, but she's an entrepreneur. She's everything that people strive to be. And she has a company called Magnolia Blossom Catering and Events. Maggie, welcome aboard. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Russell. Good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing today? I hope that you all are doing well and that you had a wonderful day.
Well, we're doing simply fantastic. We're celebrating 45 years of publishing. Maggie, you are an exceptional, awesome woman. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Well, I'm a native Washingtonian and graduated from Roosevelt High, went to Strayer College. But I got into catering because I always enjoyed seeing people eating and having fun. I remember in my apartment in Southwest, every Friday, my girlfriends would get together and come over. I cook, we drink wine, and, you know, just have a good time. So it's always been a desire of mine to not only cater, but to have a nightclub. I recall when I was working for the government and actually going to Strayer, taking a marketing class in business, I had one of the engineers that I worked for actually design my club. It was a club that had a dining room, a gym, and a dance floor. It was a three-story Victorian over on Capitol Hill. Now, I still have that dream to own a restaurant and, you know, just working, trying to get grants, trying to partner with someone in D.C., so that I can begin to apply for some of these grants that are offered. But that's pretty much how I got started. So I catered here. I lived in Philadelphia. I catered parties up there and actually began to organize my catering business when I moved back down from Philly about 15 years or so ago. So I've been doing this a long time.
Wow.
But I enjoy what I'm doing, and I enjoy seeing people happy, and I love when people enjoy my food.
I'm going to ring the bell on that one. You are truly a great caterer. Did you go to school to learn how to cook, cater, or were you say you went to culinary college, or did you come naturally? Did your mother teach you? How did you come to be such an awesome
You know, I it's something that God blessed me with. I spent my summers and every 2 weeks in August, my grandmother would take me to South Carolina, then 2 weeks. And I watched my aunt and, you know, maybe helped her when I could. I was kind of young then, so I couldn't do much. But I always remembered a lot of the things that she did and how she seasoned. But, no, I didn't go to cooking school. I did take hospitality management over at PG to get a better understanding of just the business side. But, no, it's just God's blessing on me.
How do you juggle so many hats? I want to talk a little bit about your fashion. You are one of the most elegant fashion women in the city. Did you Did that come about naturally, or would you do? Were you always into fashions? But every time I've seen you, Maggie, not only are you coordinated, you hooked, and you have colors and fashions. You know how to dress appropriately. Is that something that came from your mother, or was that something that you also studied for?
No, I grew up in an era where women were expected to look nice, look elegant, and when we, you know, when we went out. So I've always been into fashion. I actually remember my hairdresser on 9th Street, Miss Pittman, putting me in the debutantes up at the Sheraton when I was young. You know, I used to sew, make my own clothes for a time, and actually got best dressed, I think, 11th grade in high school. So, no, fashion has also been a part of my life. I have helped organize fashion shows for people. I still do. My friend, he's a stylist. A friend of mine in Philly is a stylist. So I still help him every year organize and, you know, do fundraising for his fashion show. So it's just always been a part of me.
Excellent, because you truly are a fashionable young lady. And your catering
Thank
business
you.
And the catering is also an aspect. When you bring something to an event, you brought several of your desserts. What is your specialty, desserts or entrees or soul food? What is your specialty?
I enjoy cooking food. I enjoy cooking meals. I do the mini desserts. They always set off a meal, but I enjoy doing meals, and I don't really have a specialty. I know there are certain things that people like. They love the mac and cheese. They love the jerk chicken and the fried chicken. But, you know, I specialize mostly in soul food. You know, I do a few Jamaican dishes as well.
Where do you see the culinary field going in the future?
Oh, it's definitely coming back. I think it's going to be stronger than before. There's been a lot of lessons learned. You know, we had to pivot from, you know, being able to cater in-house to, you know, just doing these drop-off deliveries. I've had drop-off deliveries during COVID where I'd had the clients set up a table outside so I could leave it there. So, but I think now the restaurant business and the catering business, they're going to be booming again, I'd say, by next year. I just had a design. Actually, I did a PowerPoint for a like a shark type thing on my other job. And one of the things that I focused on my design on the inside was, you know, really state-of-the-art ventilation system. I also looked at having pods drop down from the ceiling for those who still, you know, felt that they wanted to be, you know, not in the not with everybody in the main dining room. And those same pods would also be cute enough to just, you know, when there are no threats of pandemics, they can still be used as sort of a gathering place, you know, something really cute, something really different. But I think that restaurants, if they're not, they should be planning for pandemics. They should still make sure that everything is ventilated. We still need to be careful. But I do see the culinary business, the restaurant business, all picking back up and surpassing the way it was pre-pandemic.
Excellent, excellent. Because people miss eating out, they miss food. Restaurant business has always been a business that people wanted to participate in. One of the biggest things of dating was the going out for dinner. And then you had
exactly.
These things now. And that was one of the biggest things for, you know, for dating. You know, let's go out to dinner. And you go to a different restaurant. And food is an aphrodisiac. It makes people get closer together. Fixing food in your house is even still, I think, not going anywhere. I think people will still have in-house candlelight dinners. They'll have dinners in restaurants, and it'll be something that people will never stop doing. What's the one thing you wish you had known when you had began your career, your catering business?
To apply and get and start a restaurant ASAP. Don't wait. You know, don't wait to live your dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people go out, they get out of culinary school, and they wait, and then they never get a restaurant. or some people start out with a food truck, or they may go into somebody else's restaurant and cook their specialty meal in that particular restaurant, and then people like that meal so much they branch out, open their own restaurant. Would you say that you? What do you think makes a successful restaurant? Because how many restaurants close? They don't last past a year. It's a hard business to be in.
I know. I know. I think customer service. You know, one thing I find is that some of our establishments, and when I say our, I mean us people of color, our customer service sucks. Mm-hmm. The other thing I find is a problem is that, you know, I go to a restaurant 1 week and the food is excellent. Then I go back 2 weeks later and it's different. So they're not really following the restaurant menu card. I mean, the restaurant recipe cards that are supposed to be adhered to in that kitchen. You know, there should be, there's supposed to be a file with the recipe so that every time that meal is prepared, it's going to taste the same. It's going to have the same ingredients. I see that as an issue. And that's pretty much it. You know, I've been to a place, they're wonderfully decorated. The music is on point. But that customer service and sometimes those meals are not, it's not consistent. So consistency
and, that is a big,
and
that's a
great
big problem.
Customer
that's
service is important.
That's a real big problem when it's not consistency. When you open a restaurant and the food is excellent and you come back next week, and, that, and sometimes they blame it on the cook. They say, oh, we changed the cook. I remember one restaurant in Northwest, it was known for pancakes. And I was going to that restaurant for 40 years, 35, 40 years. They changed owners. And when I went in, I asked for the pancakes. And they had some pancakes, but nothing like the pancakes that was there. And that was a turnoff. We never went back. So people look at
exactly stuff.
They want consistency. They want service. They're not so concerned about the way the place looks. They like the way the food tastes. In some cases, the
decor
is nice.
Right, and that ambiance only adds to it, but you definitely have to have good food and good customer service.
Because you see, some restaurants, people are lined up outdoors, waiting indoors. I mean, you know, they're waiting in line just to get in the restaurant, or the reservations is hard. You hear about restaurants in New York where you have to book it a month in advance just to get a table. I mean, because the food is just that good, or reputation is just that good. So, yeah, I have several people I know who have started restaurants, and they didn't last a year. They lost millions of dollars on a restaurant. You had celebrities that opened restaurants with their name on it, but it doesn't fly because of the things you say, the customer service and the food. But you have excellent food. Your dream is to open up a restaurant.
I think more of a supper nightclub is more what I'm looking at, like a juke joint class.
Like a juke joint with good food.
Yes.
Those are the best places
when
you have people there. Like, you remember the club up on Georgia Avenue called Faces?
Oh yeah, I remember sitting up there. They had
they were known for
fish.
they were known for their fried chicken. They came all over for that fried chicken. They liked that chicken there. They had the ambiance. The drinks were good, and the chicken was good. So you're right. If you have a juke joint where you have good food and people love the ambiance, and there's a meeting place where people can come out and meet people, and sometimes if the food is reasonably priced, do you agree that the price point means something?
Yes, I do. I saw where a restaurant downtown, I won't name it, they're offering shrimp and grits, and it's $68. Now, I don't care who you are and where you came from. Who's going to spend that kind of money for shrimp and grits?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the price is important. People will pay for a good meal, but there's no reason to price certain meals so high that they're unaffordable.
I agree. Price point is extremely good. And if you got a product, people will pay more for the product if the food is good. But you got to prove yourself that food is worth the price. because
right, and you have to be reasonable when you price things out, especially when you know, you know, you're looking at what you're spending wholesale. Let's not get greedy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be reasonable, and you know, so that everyone will be happy.
What is your biggest failure, and what did you learn from it?
Let's see. Oh, when I first started out, I sold dinners, and as an opening. And I had too many different types of food. I think I had Cornish hens, crab cakes, probably fried chicken, and something else. So my experience was that from that, although I got everything done, got everything delivered, my experience from that was I am not a person that sells dinners, and that I also needed to, you know, when you're, you know, catering, or even when you open a restaurant, you don't need to have a lot of different things, but just a few good things on your menu. So that, to me, was somewhat of a failure because it was just crazy. I've never done that again.
Never do that again. That's a good thing to learn. There's a restaurant down in Florida. It's a raggedy-looking place in the front. Matter of fact, you cannot go inside the place. You can't go in the place at all. Got a little teeny window, and the only thing that restaurant sells is ribs and chicken, and it's in a brown paper bag. When you walk up to the window, you say ribs or you say chicken, and you get that man the money for that either one, and they bring you give you the bag, and that's it. But the ribs are so good, and the chicken is so good that that's all he sells. He doesn't sell anything else.
I was getting ready to say that. I bet that food is really good.
If the lines are out the door,
you need to be able to really focus
on your meal. Know what you're good at and stick with your good. There's one of my clients, one of my major advertisers. He has a raggedy restaurant on 7th Street, right next door to Wanda on 7th. He don't even have a name on the door. He don't even have no set hours. You don't know when he's going to open, when he's not going to open. He open when he feel like it. But when he's open, the line is out the door. He has the best fried chicken in the whole entire D.C. I call it Sammy's Chicken. But he's known for that.
I'm going to have to try that. I'm going to drive by there this weekend. I have a delivery in Haymarket, but I got to come through town to make a donation for someone's funeral. So I'm going to drive by there.
Yeah, he's one of my advertisers. He's an advertiser for the last 6 years, but they tried to run him out of there. The white people that didn't like his location, because you don't look good. It's a raggedy little place. They said it doesn't fit the neighborhood. But the people boycotted and marched, and the chicken is off the chain. But that's all he sells.
Right, I see
chicken.
That.
He tries to go home at night, and his wife says, they keep coming, and he has to literally kick people out that store so he can go home.
That's
crazy.
I'm definitely going to try to see if they're open this weekend when I'm up that way.
But you are doing something, and you have done something that's so phenomenal, and you've helped so many people. Tell me how you got into the domestic violence aspect of your giving back.
Well, I was invited to a Sisters for Sisters event. I think it was back in 2007-2008. And it was at the library over in Greenbelt. And when I saw how Sisters for Sisters, it was a Christmas party. And I saw how they brought women in from the shelter and was giving them coats. I said, oh, this is great. I said, because I've been in situations where I needed help and there was nobody there. And to see that group doing what they did, I said, oh, I must become a part of it. And I've been a member ever since. I do mostly, although I work with the domestic violence part, I am the assistant director for the Saving Our Sisters program, which coordinates all the HIV/AIDS outreach programs. Because once again, that could affect any of us, black, white, whoever. And so I do that for us. I do that there.
You do a great job. You're always helpful. You're always available, and I've seen you at various places, at various events. I've seen you cater different parties. Everywhere that I've come in contact with you, people gravitate to you. Even at the Chateau, you was at the Chateau one night, and you had a display, or someone had an event. They gravitated to your table. I mean, people just in awe at your desserts, your food. Everything you do is spectacular. I mean, it's not something that you take lightly, because you do it well. What are the three people who have been the most influential to you?
Let's see. My grandmother, Maggie. I think one of my high school teachers, Miss Rogan, who had actually suggested that I be a writer and get into acting, which I do a little bit now, and am getting ready to work on a book. And who else? Reverend Dana Mitchell Owens from Houston.
Excellent. It's always when you have people that cross the path of your life that makes a difference in your life, and you can reflect on them, and you thank God that they came into your life, because without those people, your life may have been different. So it's amazing that you can look back on your life and know those people, that they did make a difference in your life. And that's a blessing. That's a real blessing. What is the one common myth about your business, about catering, that you feel as though is not true? You want to debunk it. Give me something that you feel as though that people think is a myth. It's not really true, but they say it about the profession of catering or restaurants, but it's not true. You want to debunk that. What is that?
I think that people think that catering is easy, and that it's not really hard work. A lot of people, you know, don't want to pay what the price that you pay, because they look at what they do. They go to the grocery store and they buy certain items. So they look at catering and be like, well, I paid this or that. Why are they charging that much? So they don't really want to pay. You know, we're developing your menu. We're going back and forth with you on the menu. We are shopping for you. We are cooking for you. We are packing, we are transporting, we are cleaning. I mean, it's a lot. And all that needs to be paid for. So I think that the myth is that caterers don't deserve to be paid what they ask for.
People don't realize what it takes to run a business. I have another client that bakes cakes. She is an excellent cake baker. She's been doing it for 34 years. And what happened was, in the last maybe 5 or 10 years, people thought it was better to buy cake from Costco or Safeway or something. They didn't realize that the power of having a actual cake made from scratch, they thought that was kind of expensive. And that's part of what you're talking about. People don't see what it takes to make a real cake, because there's so many fake cakes.
They don't see the value.
They don't understand what it is to make a cake.
You know, people that do catering and cook and that bake, you know, that for real, who really love what they do, we cook out of love. I cook with love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we cook with our heart. And, you know, we put our best foot, we put our foot in it, because we want people to be happy. So, you know, sometimes we're not always valued for that.
It's like when it comes to macaroni and cheese, it's my favorite food. And I can tell someone that macaroni and cheese for real, or they're just making something all macaroni and cheese. People don't want to invest the money or the time or the ingredients to make real macaroni and cheese. It's not cheap to make macaroni and cheese.
So you know,
because you are a true caterer and you're cooking real macaroni. But there's so many people or businesses
or restaurants that put why put that on your menu when you know it's not real macaroni and cheese? It's not. It's something that they it has the name, but you get so disappointed when it comes on your plate and you say, "What the heck is this?" And they would rather cut. Give me your opinion of why restaurants would do that to customers. Why would they cut the ingredients or make it in a cheap way?
Because they don't respect us, the customers. Mm. The owners don't respect us. They respect their bank account. But they don't realize how much their bank account would grow if they would use quality in a quantity of ingredients.
That's real talk, because that's the one thing that's my favorite food. And when I go to a restaurant or I see it on a menu and I'm in a restaurant and I pick it because I'm looking to, I know in my mind what a macaroni and cheese is supposed to taste like. I know what I want. And it comes on the plate and I put my fork in it and eat it a couple, I send it back. I said, this is a disgrace. It's not macaroni and cheese. You know, you should put on there some kind of disclaimer. You know, it's not real or whatever you want to say, but don't call it something that it's not, because it's not macaroni and cheese. It's crazy, you know.
Well, next time I know that I'm going to treat you, I'm definitely bringing you some
macaroni. Well, I know you can cook. I know you're the real deal, Holyfield. Now, tell us about some of your favorite restaurants. I understand one of your favorite restaurants is Crestfield's. Tell us about how that became one of your favorite restaurants.
Oh, that is no longer my favorite restaurant. The last time
okay.
I was there.
I was
going to
say, it's not the same Crestfields as it was years ago. Tell me.
No, it's not even the same Crestfields as it was a couple of years ago. I, don't have a lot of favorite restaurants here. Most of the ones that I did favor no longer here. My favorite restaurant was actually in Philly, Miss Tootsie's, but the owner passed earlier this year, and that's closed. I love seafood, but I guess I'm kind of picky, so I don't really have a real favorite restaurant here, because once again, I'll go somewhere, and it'll be good one day, and then next time I'll go back, it's not, so
not
I don't have
all,
a
yeah.
favorite pick.
I was born and raised in Philadelphia, and there used to be a restaurant in Philadelphia called Bookbinders.
Oh, yes, I love their Bookbinders. Right off the
Bookbinders was off the chain. I don't know what it is today,
yes.
But back in the day.
It's no, you know, Bookbinders is no longer there. You know, when CNN Ocean Prime took over that building.
Oh, okay. I haven't been to Philly. But I remember when I was a young man, that was one of the top of the line restaurants to go to in Philly, Bookbinders. It was off the chain.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I loved that restaurant when I was there.
But you have accomplished something that is so profound that I want to thank you for even pursuing your dream and making your dream come to light. I see great things for you. I see things that basically are going to get better for you, because you check all the boxes, Maggie. You have the personality. You have the what I call the charisma. You also have the talent, and you have the personality. You are a lovable, caring, wonderful, sensitive woman. You are a real woman. You are somebody who has substance in their life. And where does that come from?
I guess from my upbringing. You know, my upbringing, the life that I've lived, the things that I've experienced, you know, have all come to make me the person that I am today.
Wow. Where can our listeners connect with you on Facebook, or what's, you have a number of website? Give us how we can contact you.
Yeah, website, I'm definitely going to get one. I, you know, have some kind of stayed away from website because I also work for a law firm for the day, and I know that it would be busy, so, you know, I stayed away from that. But I'm going to get one because I really need to come into the 21st century. But you can email me at mmagblos@aol.com. I'm on Facebook, Magnolia Blossoms Catering and Events. And my number is 240-505-4131.
tell us about the name Magnolia Blossoms. What or how did that come about, the name Magnolia Blossoms? What does that mean to you, and why did you pick that name?
I have no idea. I was, I'm telling you the truth. I was actually getting high with some people one day, and we were just talking, and I said, you know, once I stop doing this, I'm going to name my restaurant, my business is going to be called Magnolia Blossom. And that's it. Once again, God blessed me with the cooking skill. He also blessed me with that name.
That is a serious name, because I looked at the name and I digested it and I said, it fits you. You know, it's a name, Magnolia Blossoms Catering. And what you do is you do blossoming of food. I mean, the food is presentation. Tell us about presentation. How important is presentation in a display of food?
Oh, it is definitely one of the top things that you need, because you want to catch people's eyes. You know, you want to make them say, oh, I need to hire this person for my party. They set up things so good. You know, they use quality plates. They use even if it's plastic, you want to have all high quality. You know, you want your colors to coordinate. That's one thing I always discuss with my clients. What are your colors? You know, what do you see? And then I go through and I cut and I paste them, various things that I have chosen for their display, and send it to them so that we can go over it and we can decide just what and how we want that to look. But that's one of the you know, besides the food, you have to be able to catch the person's eye. You know, you want to intrigue your audience. You want to intrigue the guests with your setup.
Is it true if you give out samples, like if you're in a display or you're trying to sell, what's your take on restaurants who give out samples? Is that a good way to promote and market your food in your restaurant? Like say you have a restaurant and people are walking by, but they don't know what macaroni and cheese tastes like, or they don't know what noodles or oodles, whatever it tastes like. Would you suggest, like, if a person has a restaurant, would they walk out on the street and say, here's a sample? Or if you go to some of these malls and you see these restaurants, they run around with samples. Is that a good way to market your
right, business? Yes. I mean, that's good. I don't think I would offer it. You know, if you feel that your customer base would like to do that, you know, they'll enjoy tasting. If you have a price point where you can afford to give out samples like that, then by all means, that's not something that I would use.
Yeah, because you see it also in grocery stores.
You can always have a grand opening and maybe just have a tasting and invite, you know, a group of people for a tasting. That would be something. I would do something more like that as opposed to, you know, trying to grab an audience off the street or in the mall.
Right. Yeah, I've been to several what they call it soft openings where the restaurant does not open right away to the public, but they have a soft opening where they invite media people, different celebrities, and they come in and they serve the whole menu to that particular clientele. And then they go out and talk about it, or they take pictures or put it on their Facebook page or their Twitter account, and they promote businesses in that manner. But if your restaurant does not, like you say, have good food, you can do all the promotions, all the marketing, invite all the people, and when they get finished tasting that food, they say it's not good, and they won't push your restaurant. They won't tell people about your restaurant. They won't tell anyone about it because they don't want to embarrass themselves. They don't want to send nobody to the restaurant because they know the restaurant is not up to par. So word of mouth is still a good way to advertise your restaurant. It's an excellent way to
advertise
your restaurant.
Right, or your catering business.
Or your catering business, right. Word of mouth. People say, oh, who catered that event for you? Well, that caterer was out of sight, and they give you the business card, and then they hire you, and you come through their event, and then when people come to your event, they say, oh, I'm going to get her to do my event, and they come back, and it grows and grows and grows. Because some caterers, they demand big bucks. you can't get a caterer to do a certain wedding or a certain venue without paying thousands and thousands of dollars.
That's true.
But they've built that reputation up where they know it's going to be all that.
Right, and they can demand that.
They can demand that, right? So it's all about service and what you have. Now, do you believe that you should have a signature plate or signature item for your catering? Like what that people say, oh, that's Maggie. She's known for the macaroni and cheese, or she's known for the T-bone steak. Should a restaurant have a signature dish?
I think that you can. I think, you know, I know as a caterer, I have a signature dish. My seafood salad, everybody loves that. So I'll put that on a menu, say, Maggie, you know, signature seafood salad. So I think, you know, it's a good idea. Once again, it depends on the atmosphere that you are trying to set in that restaurant. You know, if you want to have a signature dish or if you just want to be known and all your dishes are good.
What about catering picnics? If someone's going, like, there's going to be a lot of outdoor events now, you know, because people are scared to go indoors. So you got different events that's coming up outdoors. You know, you can BYOB or bring your own picnic basket. What do you think of caterers like yourself or other caterers to cater a outdoor event, like a picnic or something, where a person would come and they would have this table of from Magnolia Blossoms that they could get all their food is catered by Magnolia Blossoms. Is that something that would be of interest to a caterer, you think?
I mean, I've done that before for, like, class reunion, things like that up at, you know, Berry Park. So I've done that before, so it wouldn't be anything different due to me.
Excellent. Well, I tell you, Maggie, you are truly what I call a one-of-a-kind caterer because you wear different hats and you service different needs. Tell me, what do you know for sure?
I know that for sure that God is real and that he has all of us. And we need to put our faith in him, believe in him, and he will take us where we need to go and give us what we need to get there.
Excellent. Give us your closing statements, Maggie.
Well, I am want to, first of all, Russell, thank you for all that you do for the community and how you make sure that we black business owners are always in the forefront and all those nonprofit leaders, how you showcase us and them. So my closing is just basically a thank you to you and thank you for having me on this podcast tonight and making a special time for me because of my schedule being so crazy. And I want to tell all those out there who, and all the business owners out there, just, you know, don't give up on your dream. Keep on pushing.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, you were so special that I did a special time slot, and it was worth every hour, every minute that we did this, because this is going to go on our archives. You can hear this anytime you want. We're going to give you the link. And again, it's been a pleasure and an honor. My name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. We're celebrating 45 years of publishing. Look for the big event maybe at the end of this year or sometime next year, but you can bet your bottom dollar Magnolia Blossoms Catering will be there. See you at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Good night.